Thanks, Ben. So we'd all, if you'd all like to stand up, we'll stretch our legs and sing a couple of worship songs. The first one we have is Indescribable.
Thank you.
just required a little bit of navigation there, but we found the right words as we went. Okay, so the next one is Hosanna.
Rightio. Well, it sounded good from up the front, guys. Anyway, very nice indeed. The now, you may recall a little while ago, I can't remember how long ago now, really, maybe last year sometime, we almost made it all the way through the book of Deuteronomy. I think we've got about two chapters to go. And I think we skipped one as well. So we might have to go back to that. But that's okay. Kind of the way that some of these things flow. Bit of a mass exodus today. We've got lots of preparations happening, of course, coming up for Whitsuntide. And the Sunday school play is going to be bigger than Ben-Hur. And as usual, and with a time machine and all sorts of stuff. What? Oh, sorry, not supposed to give that away yet. Anyway, so I thought I would have a bit of a look at one of these remaining chapters in the book of Deuteronomy. And I'm pleased I did, because it's a really, really good chapter that we're going to be looking at today. And now, I don't know, it's sort of one of the things, interesting things that I've observed over the years is that sometimes at funerals, sometimes at big events, things like that, you'll see the parent or the grandparent or something will actually get up and they'll leave a message behind encouraging their children or their grandchildren or whatever to make God a priority in their life, to love the Lord their God with all their heart. And it's something that we as parents, as grandparents, really see as being perhaps one of the most important gifts that we can give to children, is that knowledge and that love for God. And the chapter today in Deuteronomy chapter 30, which is the one we're looking at, is pretty much all about that. You've got Moses, you recall, I'll take you back here because it's been a little while. The children of Egypt, they're coming, they've come to the very border of Canaan. It's their second go. This time they're ready. There are people prepared to enter the land. Moses is not allowed to go with them. He's been told that he will die out on the other side of Jordan. And at the end of, well, perhaps the whole book of Deuteronomy really is sort of Moses' gift to the people, to this people that he has shepherded for over 40 years as they've come out of Egypt and then been given their instructions for life, instructions for setting up their new nation. And of course, he's seen them fail time and time again. And so I guess he probably sees them as being children. Perhaps that's the reason why they're called the children of Israel, is because, you know, they are actually, I guess to Moses, really, they weren't just like his sons that he had, but perhaps he sees them as being sort of in that patriarchal type sense. He might, you know, might be feeling the need to actually give them this enforcement or this encouragement to love the Lord their God with all their heart. And so you'll need to keep an eye out for that particular one statement, which of course, as we know, is the first and greatest commandment, as we move through the chapter this morning. But before we do, let's start this morning with the Lord's Prayer, which I'll repeat from Luke chapter 11, if you'd like to bow your heads. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as in heaven, so in earth. Give us day by day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Now, I've said I've covered a lot of this already, but it's worth going over, perhaps for one of the few remaining times that we will go over it, given that this is our introductory slide and has been for almost 30-odd Sundays as we've studied Deuteronomy. We know that it was written around the time of Moses' death. It was at the time, as I said before, when the children of Israel were ready to go and conquer Canaan. And in many ways, it's really it's a collection of sermons. There's a song in there. There's all sorts of things that Moses gave to the people to be taught to generations to come. In fact, you'll recall
Deuteronomy 6,
we have that specific instructions, and it's there again today, to teach these things to your children. as you walk with them, as they, you know, and to keep them on your mind as you lay down in the evening, as you rise up in the morning. This is our blueprint for life. That's basically what Moses had given to the people. There's lots of other information on this slide. Mostly that it's very old and it's completely intact. Whereas to the one that we're reading today, it has been verified at least back to 30 BC when they discovered in 1952 they discovered fragments from a scroll that contained this, and it was one of many scrolls that contained a copy of the book of Deuteronomy. So very interesting, very worthwhile book to study. Now, as you may recall, there's really three basic sections. In chapters 1 to 4, we have a little bit about the past. It tells a bit of a story, the history of Israel. And then, of course, it goes on from 5 to 26, really to put in place a whole lot of laws for ceremonial, civil, personal laws, all sorts of different laws for how the people were going to run their lives, how they were going to run their nation, how they should interact with each other, how they were going to keep, I guess, all traveling the same path together safely. And then, of course, we have this section at the end, which is really, I guess, Moses' sign-off. And chapter 30 today, which we're looking at, of course, has a bit of a re-establishment there, of a bit of a prophecy of the future as well. Be no surprise to you that Moses talks a lot about them falling away and coming back again. Returning to obedience is really the first sort of thing that we see in this chapter. It's interesting because on one hand he says you have to do all these things, and then he turns around and he says, but when you don't, all this stuff is going to happen. And when you've come from that and you remember that you should have done these things, this will be the path back. So it's almost like a very realistic view of the world, or a very realistic view or plan for mankind in his relationship with God. Some of those fonts might be a little bit small, but they are sort of the theme of this first section, this first slide, which is talking about the return back to obedience after people have left God behind. And it seems to happen continuously in history. I've heard once there's a great little saying that says, we learn from history that we learn nothing from history. So that's not to say that we have bad history teachers, but we just seem to do the same thing over and over again. And forever it has been, and forever it will be, I think, on this earth. Let's read the chapter. I'll be doing a lot of stopping as we go through this morning. So let's get started. Deuteronomy chapter 30. And it shall come to pass, when all these things are come upon thee, the blessing and the curse, which I have set before thee, and thou shalt call them to mind among all the nations whither the Lord thy God hath driven thee. Why has he driven them into other nations? Because they've left following him. And what's interesting is that even, I guess I kind of, if I want to jump forward right to the modern era, one thing that comes to mind to me about this is, how do people know, or how do people return back to God when it's a multi-generational disconnect? Do you know what I mean? Like, you think about that, you know, there's the old path that I've seen there where you may have the grandparents which go to church every Sunday and they have Christian morality, for example. Then the parents, for example, they decide, well, I don't really need to go to church because it's not very convenient, but they still carry through that Christian morality from their parents. And then you get to the next generation after that, and what you find is that not only are they not going to church, but morality itself gets questioned and becomes very, say, subjective and things like that. That's kind of where we're at in Australia, really. And I kind of wonder, you know, I see this, thou shalt call them to mind. If you haven't been taught them, I wonder how they can actually come back to mind. And I wonder whether it does actually have something to do with the path that's outlined in, say Romans 8, where it talks about God doing the calling. The Spirit is out there actively working. It's not all on us as followers of Jesus Christ to actually have to go and do all these things. It's not all our responsibility. In fact, without the Spirit, all of our efforts don't count for much anyway. So I think the thing is that what we find is that when the people's heart is ready to receive it, the Spirit is there to intercede to make that happen. And I think that's a very, very important thing. People will come to these things when they're ready. That's enough to say about that at the moment. I can say more. Okay. And shalt return unto the Lord thy God, and shalt obey his voice according to all that I command thee this day, thou and thy children, with all thine heart and with all thy soul. Got that highlighted in blue there. Interesting, that's the first of a few mentions of the same theme that we're seeing in this chapter. Turning to God with all of your heart and with all of your soul, with your desire and also with the decisions that you make in your life. That's really what we're talking about here. Verse 3, that then the Lord thy God will turn thy captivity and have compassion upon thee and will return and gather thee from all the nations whither the Lord thy God hath scattered thee. He'll bring you home. One of the interesting things that I read once was actually on the ABC. I don't watch the ABC. I don't even read their stuff anymore, but I used to. And what's interesting, because they have an app, and of course it's all the written articles, and I find that I don't have time to watch television. I don't want to listen to them on the radio, but they have lots of articles on there. On their app. Sky News does too. I've switched to that. But anyway, there was an article once that was written, and it was under the religion section, and it was about a fellow who had lived all of his life doing good works. Apparently, when he was a young lad, he went to church, of course. I think he was Catholic. But one of the things that he used to do was humanitarian type work, and he always did it with a particular group of Christians. And they were happy. They never really got into any sort of discussions about Christianity or anything like that. Well, anyway, he got to the round about the retirement age, and he sort of felt impelled that he should be going and actually checking out this church thing again. For years, he'd spoken against it. For years, he'd turned his back against it, thinking that it was all just, you know, just a crutch, all just whitewash. Anyway, and he took one step in back into his church, into the church that he'd been to as a child, and he was like, I've been away for so... He said, I can't believe that I'm finally back home. Why have I been away so long? And I think the thing is that's that returning again. That's the call back again. And you kind of got to hope that people will remember what is important. And that's turning back to God with all your heart, and thy soul is obviously making the decisions that follow after that. So that's returning from captivity, the captivity of the snares of the world. I guess you could say enslaved in the desire for money, for power, for prestige, you know, all of those things. They're all captivity. Anyway, I told you I'd stop a lot. Verse 4, if any of thine be driven out unto the outmost parts of heaven, from thence will the Lord thy God gather thee, and from thence will he fetch thee. And the Lord thy God will bring thee into the land which thy fathers possessed, and thou shalt possess it, and he will do thee good and multiply thee above thy fathers. When it says outmost parts of the heaven, I think... Does that mean the guys that are actually out on the space shuttle, you know, circling the moon sort of thing? I don't know. That's what we understand as being the heavens these days, isn't it? And the Lord will, thy God, will circumcise thy heart and the heart of thy seed to love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul, that thou mayest live. There we go. If you want something to stick, you have to repeat it a lot. and he's got it there the second time, the first commandment again. This, I remember my grandfather, after he had his bypass to his heart, he used to say that he was circumcised in heart as well now. So that was an interesting take on that. I don't know that he was right, but I think he thought it was a good joke all the same. But so anyway, but this business about having a change of heart or taking away the hardness of the heart, now, or the shell that is around the heart, I guess you could say, taking away those barriers is, again, a constant theme that is reinforced throughout the Bible. And Romans 2, Paul actually makes this, he does this interesting dance throughout Romans, where he's on the one hand, he's like, these are all good things that the Jews are doing. That's great. But you got to be careful, because it's not all just about those things. There is something else. And I think really one of the things we could probably take away from this chapter today is that there is meaning behind the mission, I guess you could say, or meaning behind the things that were given. Let's just read that little excerpt from Romans there. For he is not a Jew that is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God. Paul was one to speak with great authority, I think, on the whole law business, on the whole application of the law and the way it all, you know, works and things like that, because his background, of course, was that he was a Pharisee. He knew the letter of the law, and they had it down to a really refined checklist. You must do these things, and you must do them in this particular way. And I think the thing that was interesting is that they were the very ones who actually came up against Jesus, or the most. Because they were doing everything, they did it all as it said, but they missed the point. The actual meaning of it, or the circumcision of the heart, had not happened, and they were still just running the checklist, doing all their things, very, very happy in their self-righteousness, and yet causing destruction and mayhem amongst the people wherever they went. This is the danger with that sort of thing. I'll finish this page and then we'll read the Jeremiah one, which is another reinforcement of that inward transformation that has to take place. And the Lord thy God will put all these curses upon thine enemies and on them that hate thee, which persecuted thee. And thou shalt return and obey the voice of the Lord and do all his commandments, which I command thee this day. Jeremiah 31:31-33 is a great little reading, I think, that goes along with this discussion about the inner transformation, because it talks about a time. Jeremiah does a lot of talking about the return of Israel and what that will look like, because, of course, it's basically at the end of the original kingdom. The Babylonians are just about to enter the city of Jerusalem. He's telling them to turn and repent. They don't. And then when they finally do, he says, well, it's too late. You're better off opening the gates. Let them come in. That'll be, you know, this has got to happen now. Of course, they don't do that, and the whole place gets burned to the ground. But Jeremiah has a lot to say about the return of Israel. So let's read that. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was an husband unto them, saith the Lord. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. At the end of 32 there, he mentions being a husband. That, at the end of 33, is actually the marriage contract. I will be their God, they will be my people. That's recorded right throughout the book of Hosea. It's very, very interesting reading. It's talking about a new covenant, a new application of perhaps the same commitment that God has re-established with people over the years. You recall that the covenant made to Abraham was, of course, the covenant of circumcision, that he would then be the father of many nations and they would serve him, etc., etc. You recall the covenant that was established with the people of ancient Israel. That covenant was heavily wrapped up in the law. You do my thing, you do what I tell you, and I will be your people. I will be your God. Then we saw that in the New Testament, we see that there's a covenant established with all the people of the earth, that if you believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, you will be saved. There is that sort of reconciling through Jesus's sacrifice that covers everybody's inability in the world to live perfectly as God would have them to live. And then there is a new covenant with Israel that is established even after that. And it's a little bit different to the old one. It's not just a looking back to ancient Israel to find out how they did everything and we should do it exactly like that. It's looking forward to this new idea or this new covenant of having the law written in your inward parts, on your mind and in your hearts. Not so much about what you do, but the effect of what those things that you do on your mind or on yourself. That is the purpose of doing anything that we do, is to transform one's inner self, to make our hearts ready to be a people to serve God. That's that difference. Just as a side note, one of the interesting things, remember we spoke about the having a elevator pitch a little while ago. And one of the things that is quite commonly, asked of us as Christian Israelites is, oh, so you're Jewish Christians then? And I think the correct answer really to that is, well, no, not exactly. Because you see that the people that are Jews or that, you know, that, you know, I'm speaking generally here, there is a movement out there that look back to the Israel it was and says, yes, we're going to establish that again. We're going to see that line continue. That will all happen again. We're not those people. We don't look back. We're not looking back to that ancient Israel. We're looking forward to the future Christian Israel and the promises that are established for them and the covenant that is going to be in place for that group of people. There is a connection. Yes, there's a connection between the old Israel and the new Israel. It'll be lineage as well. It'll be the laws, personal and those sorts of things, yes. But it's a very different approach. Let's keep going. And the Lord thy God will make thee plenteous in every work of thine hand, in the fruit of thy body and in the fruit of thy cattle and in the fruit of thy land for good. For the Lord will again rejoice over thee for good, as he rejoiced over thy fathers. If thou shalt hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments and his statutes which are written in this book of the law, and if thou turn unto the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul. That's the third time that he mentions that. For this commandment which I command thee this day is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that thou shouldest say, who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it. Neither is it beyond the sea that thou shouldest say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it. But the word is very nigh unto thee, in thy mouth and in thy heart, that thou mayest do it. Now, for those of us who have read, Romans, you may recall that Paul quotes this particular chapter in Romans chapter 10, which I thought was really interesting. So we'll just read that quickly too. For Moses describeth the righteousness which is of the law, that a man which doeth those things shall live by them. But the righteousness which is of faith speaketh on this wise. Say not in thine heart, who shall ascend from heaven into heaven, that is to bring Christ down from us, from above. Sorry. Or who shall descend into the deep, that is to bring up Christ again from the dead. But what saith it? The word is nigh thee, even in thy mouth and in thy heart. That is the word of faith which we preach. That if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus, and shalt believe in thine heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. So you can see here that Paul is tying this whole, sermon that Moses has given in Deuteronomy 30 to the Christian establishment of salvation through Christ by faith in the same manner. This is something that has been given to you as an individual to keep and to follow and to live your life by. It's not something that's far off. It's not something that you have to go, it's not something that you have to rediscover again and again, but it is an ongoing walk of faith. All right, let's finish this chapter. See, I have set thee this before thee this day, life and good and death and evil, in that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that thou mayest live and multiply, and the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. But if thine heart turn away, so that thou wilt not hear, but shalt be drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I denounce unto you this day that you shall surely perish, and that ye shall not prolong your days upon the earth, whither thou passest over Jordan to go to possess it. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life, and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. Interesting that the record of heaven and earth is wrapped up in Jesus as the man, Jesus Christ. We see that from heaven, we know that Christ came, and we know that Jesus was that perfect living earth that was born without any evil or sin in him. Okay, let's have a hymn now, hymn 115. And thanks, Paul. Hymn 115, through all the changing scenes of life in trouble and in joy, the praise of Israel's God will still the faithful heart employ. Now, I thought as one last reading this morning that we might be best to jump across to a time when Jesus, actually it's in Matthew chapter 22 it's recorded in, but it was a time when Jesus was disputing or having a bit of an argument with a lot of different people. In this occasion, it's a lawyer. Prior to this, there was the Sadducees. Prior to that, there was the Pharisees. I think there's probably a scribe in there as well. You know, basically all of these people who had made it their business in life to know all the ins and outs of the law, to know how every possible way of writing this, I guess you could say, in the letter, these things could be done and how they might be taken. And I'm not sure what the lawyer was trying to prove here, but perhaps there was no law, I guess, that was known to be greater than another. I don't know. But let's read the account of Jesus and his response to a lawyer asking him about the great commandment. Matthew 22, 35 to 40. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him, and saying, "Master, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the laws and the prophets." And I thought that was a really interesting thing, that even back in Deuteronomy, Moses had the same idea. He knew that the entire purpose of the shaping and molding with all these instructions and things was to ready man's heart for God. It's one of those, I guess, it's a bit like with children, really. You might say, "I don't want you to go and do this," and that might be for their protection, you know, so they don't get run over. Or it might be that, "Don't speak like that, that's not very nice." You know, there's all of these little things that we as parents put in place, these boundaries, I guess you could say, or these rules for living. And in their isolation, by themselves, I guess really, they're probably not that big a deal. But there's something that we as parents want to see in our children. And that's not just obedience, following those things, you know. We actually want them to grow and become better people. We want them to know the difference between good and evil, and we want them to become little lights in the world. We want them to carry the light of Christ in their lives, that heart for God in their lives, that love for the Lord, as it calls it. And so realistically, when we start talking about laws and commands and things like that, I think it's probably one of those things. It's all very well to go and say, all you have to do is love God. But without any sort of direction or any sort of, I guess, instruction, you end up having to patch holes all over the place and say, "Oh yes, but you shouldn't do that. Oh, but you shouldn't do that." And in fact, if you look at the New Testament, when Paul is talking to a lot of the new Gentile believers, he's laying down all these instructions, which of course mimic a lot of the things which were established in the law of Moses. But the reason why he does that is because the difference in morality, I guess you could say, or interpretation of morality out there in the world is not going to be, it's going to be man's sort of application of these things, I guess you could say. It's not going to work out to be the perfect will of God. It's not going to work out or shape man in the way that God wants him to be shaped. But I guess there's another sort of aspect as well. Now, if I could use a bit of an analogy, and you'll have to bear with me here with the whole laws thing and things like that. It's perhaps a little bit like people driving on the roads, road rules, that sort of thing. You know, it's all very good to have roads, but if people just drive however they want, then what you're going to find is people are going to run into each other, people are going to run into other things, people are going to do things to their car, which is going to damage the car. And so what we have is that some of us have more experience with that than others. All of us have had experience with that. And if you haven't, your time will come. One thing I would say, though, about that is that there are laws there, I guess, or these road rules that are to protect the safe sort of conduct and safe travel of all the people on the road. There are rules there so that we don't run into other people because it damages yourself and it damages the other people on the road. There's also rules about really or sort of common sense type rules about where you should and shouldn't take your car. I think we probably would all agree that if you don't have a four-wheel drive and things like that, it's probably a bad idea for you to go and drive it on the beach or to go and drive it in the lake or things like that, because you will damage your car, won't you? So there's all of these sort of instructions which are, some are very specific, some relate to the health of the car, keeping the car in order, making sure that it runs, that it gets to its destination. There's other ones that relate to not interfering with other people on the road as well. Another thing that you may not have considered is that depending on what class of vehicle you're driving to, you may have extra laws, or you may have, well, there'll be common laws, but then you may have extra laws as well. If you are a heavy vehicle, for example, a big truck on the road, you have maximum heights that you can, your load can be. You have speed limits, which are a little bit less than other people. If you're a motorbike, I don't know, I don't drive a motorbike. Are there any other rules, any different rules with that? Probably just don't fall off, be a little bit more observant, things like that. You're a little bit more precarious, in a bit more of a precarious. Wear a helmet, that's right. If you're in a car, you don't have to wear a helmet. Behind, oh, well, there you go. Well, that's one difference anyway. What's this? Oh, yeah, lane splitting, you can do that. Yeah, that's right. And so you can see here that the point that's being made here is that it's all very well to say, you know, we have road rules, but then we also understand that within those road rules, not all of them are written road rules, and not all of them relate to all people or all types of vehicles as well. But if you consider that in being like a trip, you know, up to say from here to up to the Gold Coast, for example. Now, if you're in an EV, you might have to, you know, stop about half a dozen times. It'll probably take you about 30 hours to get there. But if you're in a, if you're able to fill up along the way, you should generally be able to get up to the Gold Coast in what, about 8 hours, something like that. That sort of thing. Now, if you're a truck, you'd expect that it would probably take you a little longer. However, if you decided that you were going to deviate and you're going to go, you know, I don't know, out bush for a little bit, that sort of thing, off the track, it's going to take you a little bit longer, and potentially when you get back, your car's going to be in a little bit worse shape and you may not even make the destination, right? All of these things, all of this sort of thinking, all of these analogies, I guess you could say, are to sort of tell us that, or to, I guess, put into a picture into our minds that we need to consider what it is that will get us to the destination. Now, if the destination is preparing the heart of God, of man for the kingdom to come, if the destination is preparing ourselves for becoming the redeemed that actually bodily move into the kingdom of Christ, then we need to be mindful of what it's going to take to get there. This is the reason, this is the thing that the Israelites of the Old Testament, I guess, missed. They forgot where they were going. They forgot the entire purpose of the reason they were doing things. They started looking at the speed limit and they said, oh, okay, it says we can go 110, but if we go 40... then we are going to be really, really safe. It will probably take you a very long time to get anywhere if you are going 40 kilometres an hour. You're not breaking the rule, are you? Like, you know, Well, yeah, okay. You may cause problems for other people. You're not breaking the rules, though, right? In fact, you could be said that you're even being better than the rules because you're doing that on top of the rules, right? You're going slower than anybody would possibly really want to go, so you might be better than everybody else. Except, once again, you've still got to make it to Brisbane somehow, or Gold Coast, or wherever. I can't remember where we're going, but we were going somewhere in Queensland, right? Yeah, Gold Coast, there we go. There's rides in the Gold Coast. So the purpose here is to realize that there is what is written, there is a reason why those things are written, and all of those things are there to help direct us and to get us to the destination that we need to go to. Returning to our 40 kilometres an hour, going 40 kilometres in the 110 zone, you're going to become a danger to all of those other drivers on the road if you are travelling on the freeway too slowly, right? You're not actually real. You might be all doing what is, you know, you're doing more than what the rules say, but you might actually be causing more damage than what was intended, which was none. It might be more dangerous doing what you're doing than if you were to perhaps look at what was said and the purpose of it. The purpose of a speed limit, of course, is that it is the safe speed to go on that particular stretch of road and make sure people don't go too fast, hurt other people, etc., that sort of thing. In the same way, when we look at instructions in the Bible, we need to consider the purpose that they were there for, the effect that they're going to have on other people, and the effect that they're going to have on ourselves as well in any application. And I think the Bible's got a really good mix of all of that. And it's up to us to discern these things. But the whole purpose, of course, in all of these things is to love the Lord our God with all of our heart and with all of our soul and with all of our mind. And so in these things, that might being the underlying journey, I guess you could say, God creates these covenants. God creates these agreements with us. And he says, if you do these things, you will be my people. If you do these things, you will be eligible for obtaining this particular glory, if it's his will for us. And I guess that's the thing. With all these things, we need to consider where we're going, what it is we're aiming for, and then to look at what it is that we've been given in the Bible and follow those instructions from there. And I think that's pretty well a good summary of Deuteronomy 30. And I don't know, we'll see what comes in 31. It might be more of the same thing, but we'll see. But anyway, that'll do for this morning. And let's finish this morning with one more song, if the band would like to come up.
If you'd all like to stand up, we'll sing our last song, Lord of Lords.
Beholding your beauty is all that I long for, to worship you, Jesus, is my soul.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for coming this morning. I did kind of enjoy looking at that Deuteronomy 30. I thought that was a very interesting look at that application of rules and instructions, etc., which is, I think, is an important study to make. And I guess when it comes down to it, it's as Deuteronomy 30:15 says, "See, I have set before thee this day life and good and death and evil." It's up to us to discern, to work out our salvation with fear and trembling, as it says. As mentioned, oh yes, that's right. Yes, we do actually have a working bee tomorrow morning at 9 for those who would like, who can make it. That would be great just to prepare for the place for Whitsuntide. And yeah, that. And also next Sunday we also have a choir practice as well for the Greater Singleton and Sydney churches coming to here to do that. So I'll be sending out an email for that. But apart from that, have a great week. See you again next time.